A whooper swan cuts through morning mist, its yellow and black bill unmistakable against the gray Fenland sky. Behind it, dozens more materialize, not the familiar mute swans of city parks, but wild Arctic travelers announcing themselves with resonant clu-clu-clu calls. We spend our lives surrounded by avian wonders we barely notice. That pigeon dodging your feet on the South Bank, its ancestor nested on remote sea cliffs. The starlings mobbing your garden feeder, they're performing cognitive feats that baffle computer scientists. Britain's birds don't just exist in our landscape. They transform it into theater, if only we pause long enough to watch. What makes these creatures so captivating isn't their exoticism, but their proximity. Epic migrations ending in supermarket parking lots, Arctic hunters gliding over suburban gardens, ancient rituals unfolding beside motorways. The drama isn't somewhere else. It's here, now, waiting. 200 golden plovers wheel overhead near Taunton in January, flashing from dark to brilliant gold in synchronized turns, the avian calendar marking seasons by wingbeats, not dates. By June, returning waders signal failed northern breeding attempts. Summer solstice hasn't arrived, yet autumn migration has already begun. Birds operate on a different temporal plane, always ahead of our perception. Even in January's depths, preparation unfolds. Robins intensify their songs, blue tits inspect nest holes, herons build in bare trees. Black grouse return to their leks as early as November, months before females arrive. On Welsh moorland, 8 blackcocks strut at dawn, their purple-black bodies and shocking red wattles gradually visible as light strengthens. Great crested grebes, nearly extinct in Victorian times, perform their symmetrical courtship dance, rising breast to breast like hopeful lovers. Britain's modest size contains remarkably diverse habitats. A great crested grebe, unremarkable in the Midlands, becomes a genuine prize on Scotland's Moray coast, just 50 miles away. It begins in February, intensifying by April when open windows welcome the morning. A thin, silvery voice speaks of forests and hedgerows. Before you can locate it, another joins, then another, similar yet distinct. Soon, a babble of voices washes over you, announcing spring's arrival. Britain's dawn chorus surpasses most worldwide because distinct seasons compress breeding into weeks rather than months. British songbirds must attract mates rapidly from late winter through spring. In Graysidio Woods on an early April morning, a robin begins the performance in darkness. Blackbirds follow with fluty tones, then song thrushes with their jazz improvisations, repeating phrases twice. These early singers, feeding mainly on forest floor creatures, establish territories at dawn before a day of competition. As sunlight filters through trees, more layers join. Chiff-chaffs with insistent two-note calls, great tits, various finches. Finally, warblers complete the chorus. Blackcaps chortle, garden warblers babble, willow warblers offer affecting songs. The nightingale requires specific habitats, coppiced woodland of particular age and scrubby thicket structure. Their decline to an estimated 6,500 males stems largely from habitat loss. Like all great musicians, they know what to leave out matters as much as what to include. On a bitter March Sunday, a wheat ear perches on a Victorian pumping house, bedraggled after its journey from south of the Sahara. This tiny bird might continue to Scotland, Iceland, or incredibly Canada. Migration defines many birds, creatures of perpetual motion bound to invisible global flyways, enthralled to seasons and weather. It's both curse and blessing, making them fascinating to us who remain bound by family, work, and place. Wheat ears pioneer spring migration, appearing as early as March. At Pegham Harbor, a male redstart appears, rusty red breast, ash-grey back, black throat, seeming almost designed for African savanna rather than British sea fret. Then something extraordinary unfolds. What seems like wind resolves into a tree shivering with at least 50 willow warblers, tiny birds just arrived from tropical Africa. Electronic geolocators have revolutionized tracking. The British Trust for Ornithology's Cuckoo Project revealed surprising routes, some traveling through Italy and Malta, others through France and Spain before crossing the Sahara. Young cuckoos must navigate alone without guidance, raised by foster parents that don't migrate sub-Sahara. As April ends, the most recognizable birdsong rings out, the resonant, querulous call of the cuckoo, spring. Kittiwakes, pristine white against overcast skies, nest amid Newcastle's urban landscape exactly as they would on North Atlantic cliffs. Unlike opportunistic relatives haunting farmland and landfills, kittiwakes are Britain's only true seagulls, strictly maritime. I first watched them during university, moving between the Baltic flour mills and the Tyne. When the Baltic became an art center, they simply relocated to nearby quayside buildings and Tyne Bridge. Hours later, something dizzying appears. What seems like insects orbiting bleached bones resolves into gannets, white crosses glittering above Bass Rock in the Firth of Forth. This hosts one of the world's largest gannetries, with up to 150,000 birds yearly. Most spectacular are their hunting dives, gaining height, spotting silver flashes below, then folding into sleek harpoons plunging at nearly 60 miles per hour. Along London's South Bank, feral pigeons feast on tourist crumbs. Three circle near the Tate Modern when a peregrine appears, pigeon-chested but with pointed wings. Its wing beats quicken before folding into a 200-mile-per-hour dive, striking a plump pigeon. After wartime culling and DDT devastation that thinned eggshells to breaking, peregrines now thrive in cities, where skyscraper canyons mimic natural cliffs, often favoring cathedrals as nest sites. At dusk on the Somerset Levels, starling murmurations begin with 20 birds, swelling to thousands in fantastical shapes, flying saucer, whale, double helix, creating the impression of a single living entity. Computer modeling reveals each starling monitors just six nearest neighbors to maintain the flock's cohesion. At Rutland Water, Tim Appleton has shaped the nature reserve for 40 years, planting 100,000 trees and hand-digging 25 reedbed channels. Now, 14 hectares of reedbed support booming bitterns. Bird Fair, conceived in a pub, has raised $14 million for conservation. The osprey appears at Manton Bay, unmistakable with its hovering, plunging into water, and emerging with a trout. Once extinct in Britain between 1916 and 1954, ospreys recolonized Scotland naturally. Their introduction to Rutland proved remarkably successful, with six breeding pairs by 2014 and birds spreading to Wales. Conservation isn't merely hopeless rearguard action, it's a testament to what's possible when we care enough to act. Britain's birds don't demand pilgrimage. They ask only for attention. Slow down, open windows at dawn, pause on bridges, notice the shapes overhead. Birdwatching teaches a different way of inhabiting time, where seasons shift by wing beats rather than calendars, where a January morning transports you to the Arctic. The whooper swans at Welney, the peregrines above the Tate, the starlings performing their aerial ballet, they're all asking, are you paying attention? Once you start, you can't stop. You'll plan routes around reservoirs, arrive late because a kestrel hovered over the motorway, dream of birds so vividly you wake disappointed. The greatest journey isn't to distant wilderness. It's the one that begins when you step outside and look up.